Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, January 16th, 2024. And if you want to call in, the number is 347-857-3293. And if you want to know what you're calling in for, you're calling in to Ralph Pointer, What's Happening, Blog Talk Radio. If you want to know what it's about, it's a news analysis. It's a seminar, really. It's an anatomy of oppression, and an anatomy of repression and oppression requires an anatomy and a discussion and a definition and an explanation and a connecting the dots about colonialism and imperialism, which is really talking about the American capitalist empire. And tonight we're saying, who really was Martin Luther King? And just how should we assess his contribution to history? But before we get to that, I'm your host, carrying on for Comrade Ralph Pointer, who said, pick up the work, presente. The hits just keep on hitting. We lost two more tonight. We lost our dear comrade and warrior, Sekou Odinga. And we lost the organizer from the December 12th movement, Viola Plummer. So we're going to stray a little bit from our agenda. We're going to start off talking about our comrades. And hopefully this tape will work for us tonight.
The sad
sad fact. And what we must understand that no people who loses relationship with its warrior society can exist. Let me say it again, because I've been saying it for 50 years and I don't think we get it. No people who lose association with its warrior class can exist. Now let me give you an example. It's been pointed to time and time again that after an outrageous murder by the Army of Occupation or pseudo-members of the Army of Occupation, people get aroused to the point where they march. And we know that that's not good enough. And how can we go through this over and over and over again without changing the way in which we act or react? We've been begging the system for years to release our political prisoners because they are guilty of what we all should be guilty of, working for freedom. This is their only crime. But in a-
And that is why we celebrate our political prisoners. I think we should understand that the Honorable Sekou Odinga was just that. So what we're going to do now is open up the mic for some of our comrades who are here to talk a bit or honor our dear warrior, Sekou Odinga. And did I just lose? Okay, I think I'm a bit precipitous. I thought I saw, oh, there he is, yes. I believe our chairperson for National Jericho and the Spirit of Mandela, Mike, is open. Jihad, are you in the house?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me, everyone?
Oh, very clearly. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, bismillah, and Rahman Rahim, in the name of Allah, most merciful, most gracious. My name is Jihad Abdul Mumit, the chairperson of the National Jericho Movement, and also on the coordinating committee of the Spirit of Mandela. So I just want to herald up the fact that Sekou Odinga is my comrade in the Black Liberation Army, and just to salute him, as we are all doing, and as Comrade Ralph Betty just played an excerpt from him about cautioning us from separating ourselves from the warrior class, from our fighters, our freedom fighters, and how important it is. But you realize that this particular class of fighters, known as the Black Liberation Army, that we are getting older and we are passing away. We experienced Russell Maroon Schultz earlier this year, Sekou Odinga now. And as we get older and older, we just hope that the lessons that we are able to impart to our younger generations, the lessons that we have learned and that we'd like to share with you. And Sekou Odinga has spoken many times. I would encourage listening audience who are not familiar with our comrade, you know, to seek out the information on YouTube, on the various programs. There's a plethora of information there of him speaking and sharing advice, our mistakes, what we did. It's very important that we learn from this to keep that type of energy, that type of resistance, that level of resistance cocked and ready. As we can see, conflagrations all around the world, our oppression continues today as it did before, maybe even worse, because in many respects, we're not awakened to it as we were in the 60s because of the mesmerization of materialism and all the other things that spectacular sports. You know, we live in the most wealthiest country in the world, so it's easier to be for oppression to be assuaged by the false hope of chasing the carrot and picket fence and all of these type of things that America has to offer on the back of slaves and off the back of the oppression of other people around the world. So we salute Sekou Odinga, and we salute all of our my fellow Black Liberation Army comrades. I think we have Ashanti Austin on the line also. But that's my message to everybody listening, is that we benefit from those of us that are alive. We benefit from the lessons of those that passed away, really realizing that it's just a matter of time that you won't hear any more utterances from anyone that's alive that's a member of the Black Liberation Army. So benefit for however you can while we're still here. And thank you, Sister Betty, for allowing me to share those words.
Oh, hello.
Ashanti.
Yes, I'm there.
I guess you can go on. I don't hear Sister Betty.
Okay. I mean, are they hearing me?
I'm
yeah,
hearing
we
you.
Can.
I'm
yeah.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, Brother Ashanti.
Okay.
Your it's open. It was my bag. I was trying not to have any background noise, and I muted myself. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Oh, okay. All right. Sister Betty, first I want to thank you for allowing me to be on to say a few words. And also to say also that I really love Brother Ralph, and his spirit lives on. I'm going to remember all the persistence of him as a freedom fighter for all the years I've known him, the decades I lived in New York. On Sekou, I mean, I'm not going to say a lot. I think I knew him more as a legend than as, you know, like you had this time together. And, but by the time Sekou had got released from prison, I was already in Rhode Island, and my journeys back to New York were less frequent. But he was the one that we knew who was a member of the Black Panther Party, the Panther 21, takes off, goes to Africa, could have stayed, made his life in Africa. But his dedication was to our struggle here, you know. So on need, he comes back. He comes back into the belly of this beast to rejoin the ranks of the underground. And that's how the stories that I had heard about him. He became larger than life to me, you know. And then when you actually meet him, he's been called a gentle warrior. I'm like, yeah, that's him. That's him. You know? Like my comrade said, Jihad said, we need to remember him. As who he is, the essence of him, as a soldier who is willing to do whatever is necessary for the liberation of his people, you know, and that's important. Black Liberation Army. And so the last thing I want to do, and because I just found out today that a comrade Viola passed, you know, so that kind of hit me a little bit. Yeah. So I'm going to read a poem, and then I'm off. And it's not a long poem, but this poem is by my mentor in the Black Liberation Army. Her name is Malika, Frankie Mae Adams. And she wrote a poem years ago that's my favorite, called A Poem for You. And it goes like this. Rushing leaves, time, they say, passes swiftly, giving us little time to grow up. Days, feeding days, divided by moments when I reflect. Moments, those feeding moments of resistance. When some went to do battle with the enemy close around, resisting. Moving on. Naya, knowing our purpose. Feeding days, and I reflect on those moments of resistance. Rushing leaves, black butterfly, freedom. Oh, freedom's in the air. Clash of resounding arms, and I reflect on those moments when we resisted. Lest we forget. Right on. Thank you. Carry on his spirit. Carry on Ralph's spirit. Carry on our comrades who have joined the ancestor spirit in a real way. And I thank you. Thank you for allowing me these few words.
Thank you for being able to join us this evening to lift their names up, our warriors. I would like to ask Brother Kazi. I think I've got your mic open. I hope I have. Brother Kazi, Boston Jericho, in the house.
Peace. Yes, and I'm not going to be long either, but I do want to say, you know, about my brother Sekou and Ralph and Sister Viola, and echo what Jahad was saying about we're all getting older, and people need to learn from our mistakes and victories. And Brother Sekou, the most that I could say is that we learn from his example, you know, the way he lived. And he was for real. It wasn't fake. He was for real. He gave up his life for the people. And we need more people to be like him, like the song says, be like Sekou, you know? We need people to step up and be like that, man. That's about all I have to say.
Thank you.
All right, just right on. All power to the people.
Yes, all power to the people. I see Sister Ann is in the house. I don't know if she'd rather comment later before we go to the poet. The rest of the poets in the house. Sister Ann, did you want to make any further comments?
Okay, I'll be brief because I'm still, you know, quite overwhelmed with emotion. You know how that can be. I just wanted to say, you know, way back when Sekou first got captured, we were outside, you know, then way downtown Manhattan there by the courthouses and the federal prison protesting because Sekou was tortured very badly. And I believe they ruptured his spleen. We were holding a demo outside and handing out literature to people to explain what was going on. And people were like, oh, this is America. That doesn't happen here. So I don't know what America they're living in, but it certainly isn't this one. And, you know, that was another thing that, you know, during his trial, he was never allowed to get on the record the fact that he had been tortured. They would not accept the medical records or any of that stuff. And then they sent him first to Marion and then to the ADMACs. So, you know, in all the years he was in the feds, he was like in the worst places. And then when he finally got to the state of New York, as soon as we knew exactly where he was, Paulette and I went to visit him. He was at Shawangunk, and we were just having like a little conversation. And one of the first things he said to us, and I'll always remember this because it was really amazing, he was like, I'm not used to being around so many people. Because of all the years that he had spent in solitary confinement. So just getting used to being in a prison in general pop was a big adjustment, you know. And then, you know, as time went on, we continued to visit. Then, you know, Sekou continued to visit. And says, as she says, she met her soulmate. So that was very happy. And we were able to, you know, finally bring him home in 2014. So we were very glad that he was able to have these years, you know, and to continue to be an example and continue to teach and for us to learn. Because, you know, as Kazi just said, we need more people like Sekou who are willing to make that commitment because this is not going to get any easier. It's about to get a lot harder than it has been for a while. So all I have to say is, Comrade Sekou Odinga, presente, presente, presente.
Presente.
Thank you. I want to say, in terms of what Sister Ann and the others have commented on, Ralph was explaining to me that at one point he may not have been allowed to comment, but maybe it was at a press conference. Someone tried to say to him, well, what's the difference between political prisoners and any other ordinary criminal? And Sekou held up his hands, and it showed how his fingernails had been pulled. And he said, they don't do this to ordinary criminals. So the issue of him not being able to speak up was very critical, because he had the evidence on him as to what they do to our comrades behind the wall. That is why we call them death camps. So I want to thank you, and we will be, hopefully if I can get the tape right, hearing from Sekou in his own words. When I sort of went on blank there, it was because I took myself offline so I could try to get the tape right. But we want to continue because I, for one, am finding I cannot live without poetry. So we're going to ask Professor Louis, would you please join us? And Sister Wright, please hang in there. And I want to remind those of you that last week we talked about connecting the dots of the decadent ruling class. Our warriors are transitioning, but that decadent ruling class that Sister Julia tried to make us understand and that Brother Joel Myers tried to follow up with her discussion still exists. I mean, and it's not just Trump, it's Biden too. And it's not just Biden, it's Epstein too. And it's not just Epstein, it's Prince Charles. And it's not just Prince Charles, it's Gates. Okay, so if we don't understand that they have a way of perpetuating themselves while we, have to transition, if we don't leave something behind, if we don't fight colonialism and create alternative structures to combat colonialism, our next generation is doomed to repeat the same mistakes that we made. So without further ado, Professor Louis, your mic is open. I want to thank everybody for sitting in here with me and for helping me keep it going and helping me to pick up the work. Professor Louis, I also thank you.
My immigrant daddy never was nobody, but to me, he was a lot. He never graduated from high school, but to me, he was a lot. He never made money or owned a house, but to me, he was a lot. He never watched me playing ball. He didn't know second base from home plate. He didn't treat me hard and mean, and to me, he was a lot. He didn't say, I love you, but I always could feel it, and to me, he was a lot. 11 years old, I started to work alongside him. From working with him, I understood him better. Little immigrant teenager ripped from his homeland, foreign young man on the streets of New York, never went to high school, but he spoke four languages. To me, he was a lot. Big shots never know who could be smart. Big shots don't measure the size of your heart. When he had the stroke and lay in the hospital, Medicaid had to pay the bill. But to me, he was a lot. All his four languages mixed up together, couldn't speak a straight word, a real bitter pill. Now I still got his shirt that I wear sometimes. He always said it was a nice piece of cloth. We buried his ashes in Prospect Park and went to the park at 5 a.m. Even dead, he had to hide from the cops. And to me, he was a lot. And I hope to pass on what he gave to me, because to me, he was a lot. A little warmth on down to the children, because to me, he was a lot. A little culture from over the sea, because to me, he was a lot. We may be small in the eyes of the mighty. We may be poor in the eyes of the rich. We may be pawns in the wars of the world, but we still taste of the tree of life. Our children run through the streets of your cities, and they're all going to drink from the tree of life. So my daddy never was nobody, but to me, he was a lot. Never nobody to the high and mighty, but to me, he really was a lot.
Thank you so very much. It did just what I wanted it to do. Poetry lifts up your spirit and gives you the courage to keep right on fighting. And I'm sure that if there is a hereafter, Sister Lynn and Comrade Ralph and Comrade Sekou are listening. Thank you, Professor Louis. We're going to go right along to our next poet who, you know, is always helping us connect the dots, just like Professor Louis. Comrade Julia, your mic is open. Thank you for coming back.
Thank you. There was a question on the Mumia listserv about anger. Martin Luther King, as we commemorate Martin Luther King and what is termed nonviolence, and as we are in mourning because mourning only happens when we love, and anger is part of mourning. Maroon Wadia Mutulu Shakur Rochelle Magui Ed Poindexter Sekou Odinga Kamau Bektemba Viola Plummer Terry Bisson John Pilger and rest in peace and power Ralph Poynter. This is to those left behind, and to you, Betty. What role does anger play? Certain indigenous tribes say there are seasons for the emotions, that summer is the time for anger and the showing of shouting of slogans of our cause on the rooftops, and winter is the time of hibernation, of retreat to resolve the contradictions. I believe this is a metaphor, and that there is a role for anger in winter as well, if only because of climate change, but also because the furnaces where we are being burned in the winter too. Our successive mournings and our knowledge of what caused them, death by incarceration, carceral elder abuse, the compromised longevity of black folks, post-traumatic slavery syndrome, all this produces anger, whatever the season. We mourn because we love, and inherent in that mourning is a phase of anger. It is legitimate, righteous. We must hold on to it. It is the 102nd day of the Palestinian genocide as we mourn our own at home. The Israeli regime and the U.S. police state banks on our anesthesia. They work overtime to create it, but our anger is the antidote to numbness. Stay eloquently angry, comrades. It need not be acid. It can be alkaline. It need not be full of hatred. It is an anger born of love. It need not be vindictive. It is an anger born of a respect for life. Those we lost and love have become ancestors and are beyond the pain they have experienced in life. But there are those left behind, our extended families. Their hearts are broken as they carry on the legacy. We are at their side, just as the ancestors are at our side. This is where our anger should melt and give way for those in the support committees, for Rochelle Maroon Schultz, Rochelle Magui, Mutulu Shakur, Ed Poindexter, Sekou Odinga, Ralph Pointer. This is where perhaps separate memorials are necessary, yes, but not enough. This is where we could perhaps put our heads together, our spirits together, to memorialize them and our future losses with an all-encompassing initiative gathering them in our collective heart.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. I wish there was time for you to repeat that one. That was a heartful. That was a heartful. Thank you. It is also very healing. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to move on because we've got quite a list here. Don't know how many people are just listening and how many want to make a comment. So we're going to move right along, and we're going to ask our comrade, Sister Lisa, if I have opened up her mic properly.
Uhuru, and thank you so much. And Sister Betty, I just want to again emphasize how your strength and your determination is just so uplifting, and I feel it with every move that you make. Brother Sekou, I did not get a chance to know him, although I had the chance to be in his stratosphere. I remember it at the International African Arts Festival, and we would have the literature table and everything, and then, you know, there would be the table, a couple of tables down that would have information about freeing all political prisoners. So I remember I had the chance to at least be in his circle, and it's so important for us to hear about the political prisoners and their importance, because it helps to give us an internal GPS system and a way that we should be interpreting and looking at this world. If we don't align with the Black Liberation Forces and the forces of liberation, then it's like we're going to allow the colonizers to have our mind and to set a blueprint for us internally, which will be like our GPS system. So these programs are so important, and I look forward to knowing more and learning more about Brother Sekou. And but Sister Viola Plummer, I did have the chance to know. And I had the chance to be in her, be in her orbit, and, you know, to work at times with my comrades from December 12th. And it was just so great knowing that, you know, I'm in New Jersey, but many times I'm in New York, but it was so great knowing that there was an organization that I could call on, that you know, of comrades who I knew who were freedom fighters. And Sister Viola Plummer was and is and will continue to be a force. Somebody so strong, so passionate. And what I want to relay is that I was one of those people, you know, from the next generation coming up that would be breathing her. I would be absorbing her envy. Many times I didn't say anything. But I just want to let people know how important their presence and their work is. And she certainly set a strong living example of how to move through this world. And I have been so inspired by her, and also people like yourself as well, Sister Betty, you know. And I wanted to say to this younger generation, because it is important, I mean, we have work to do. We have to make sure that we are impacting, and not just impacting, but imprinting upon this generation that's coming up after us. You know, these messages, this energy, these people. And I want to say to them, too, that many times I would just show up. I didn't know anything. I still know hardly anything. But I would just show up in the crowd. And I would be listening. And I would make it a point to try to just sometimes ask a couple of questions of the older generation, because you never know who you're talking to. You never know their experiences. And there's just so much to learn. You'd be surprised. There would be so many times I would be, you know, coming to a demonstration or a meeting or whatever and sitting among people, and then I would hear something about them. They would relay something about their personal lives, and it would just be, it would just be so overwhelming and impactful. Again, Sister Viola Plummer, I love you. Your energy landed on me as it did so many others. You are seeing who you are. Not many times I miss you because your life is there. Your body is left, but your life is there. And thank you, Sister Betty. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. We're going to keep the spirit going. We have another warrior in the house and a person who stands for the correction of the unions in this country. In addition to her fight for against mayoral control, I speak of none other than Sister Brenda Walker of Operation Power. It is an honor to have you in the house, and I know you're going to lift up a few words concerning Sister Viola Plummer of December 12th.
Yes, the honor is mine, Sister Betty, and thank you so much, Lisa, for those beautiful, wonderful, heartfelt words. I mean, you snatched the words out of my mouth. I couldn't, oh my goodness, I couldn't express it more, what you said about Sister Betty. I mean, you are our warrior, definitely one of my sheroes, and your strength is, you know, gives me strength. You know, so I don't know what they did when they made you, but they definitely broke the mold. They did the same with Sister Viola. She's an icon. She is a, I mean, the words cannot even express it. Who she is, what she's done, what she brings to our people. She was Harriet Tubman, for sure. That's the energy that she's given off to me. She is such a strong woman. When I first started getting involved, I brought my children. I wanted to bring my children so that they can be around greatness and they can see for themselves, you know, what it is that we're fighting for, what we're struggling for. And they had the opportunity, you know, they're young adults now, but they had the opportunity to meet and be in her presence as we, you know, as when they were young, we spent time with the December 12th movement as they were, you know, they were learning about who they were and the importance of being in the community. So she's done so much just for my family, and she's done so much for the community, the national community, the international community. She's known all over the world. And she's one of those people that can never be replaced. All that she's brought to us, and her legacy will continue to live on. My condolences to the December 12th family, to Charles and Inez Barron, because she was very much loved. So much love. And to do this work, you have to have the love for your people. That is the ingredient. That's what keeps us going. That's what keeps us on the front line. And this is what our warriors have. Sometimes you may not see it, but you know the love is there because for you to do this work, you have to have love for the people. So even speaking of Brother Sekou Odinga, another warrior, but a gentle giant. So I had the opportunity of being around him and his wonderful spirit, and these beautiful, our beautiful comrades doing the work, and brother Ralph. Oh my goodness, he's another gentle giant. And yes, we're losing our warriors. We're losing our warriors. So you know that lets me know that we, the next level, have to step it up. But we'll never be able to fill these shoes. But you know, I can't even keep up with you, Sister Betty. But you know, I got my marching orders to get my knees together and keep it moving, and that's what I plan to do. So I thank you for the time, and again, my condolences to everyone for the great loss.
Brenda, one of the things she did was she reached out in solidarity with our African comrades on the continent. I believe in particular Zimbabwe. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes.
And in addition to that, the December 12th movement was part of that struggle to annually protest the army of occupation killing our people.
Yes. Yes. Definitely. Reparations.
She put in place institutions that would at least call attention to what was happening to us in this country and make the connections between what was happening to our cousins on the continent of Africa. So I salute her for that.
Yes.
And, you know, on a community level, she could go into the community. And as that, in that role, she supported Charles Barron many times in the different political suits he put on in order to continue to organize our community. And that was one of her roles. She played several roles. And that's a lesson for all of us. We can't all be like Sue or Brother Kazi, but we can at least create the sea for the fish to hide from, to hide in. They said that's what the community is supposed to do. It's supposed to be the sea to protect your warriors. And these kind of activities do just that. So I'm going to keep moving on, and I thank you. Those of you who don't know Sister Brenda Walker, she is a tireless fighter for union rights. And right now in New York City, they're trying to take the health plan of the retirees and give it to the corporations, just like that. We paid for it several times over. They are taking it and giving it to the corporations. And people like Sister Brenda are all that's standing between us and absolute outright thievery. So I salute you in your own right, Sister Brenda. Thank you for what you're doing. I'm going to move right along. Pardon me. Again, one of the things that happens when your heart keeps getting in your mouth is you make mistakes. So I appreciate any kind of corrections or checkmates. I made an error on one of the flyers I sent out, and Brother Bob Lederer got on the phone to me right away, and I give everybody permission, you know, to pull my coattails. We're going to keep going. I want to thank Brother Henry for returning. We always miss him when he's not around. Brother Henry, your mic is open, and the rest of you, hang in there. We're going to get to you. We've extended the time.
Thank you, Sister Betty, and I'm honored and humbled by the enthusiasm and support and dedication of our freedom fighters. They're not paid. They don't receive a pension. They don't receive the accolades that they deserve for fighting against oppression. I'd like to share with our young people a book written some years ago by a man named William Pepper, and it's entitled An Act of State. And it details the effort by the government to silence Martin Luther King. And it's important for young people and even for the veterans to read this, because it shows and documents the extent to which this government talks one way and acts another. Yesterday they had a memorial service, of course, in Washington. But the government itself was responsible for his demise, and that's the hypocrisy of it all. And he's not by himself. We've had freedom fighters throughout our history attacked and maligned and disparaged. But that's the reason why we must always remember them and support them, because they stood on the line. And so I just want to quickly share with folks. On April 4th, 1968, Martin Luther King was in Memphis supporting a worker strike. By nightfall, army snipers were in position. Military officers were on a nearby roof with cameras, and Lloyd Jowers had been paid to remove the gun after the fatal shot was fired. When the dust had settled, King had been hit, and a cleanup operation was set in motion. James Earl Ray was framed, the crime scene was destroyed, and witnesses were killed.
William Pepper, attorney and friend of King, has conducted a 30-year investigation into his assassination. In 1999, Lloyd Jowers and other co-conspirators were brought to trial in a civil action suit on behalf of the King family. 70 witnesses set out the details of a conspiracy that involved J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, Richard Helms and the CIA, the military, Memphis police, and organized crime. The jury took an hour to find for the King family. In an active state, you finally have the truth before you, how the United States government shut down a movement for social change by stopping the leader dead in his tracks. And I would encourage folks to, if you haven't read this book or examined it, that it's worth your while.
Well, I thank you. That is just what we need. And those of you who are not familiar with that period of time, if you follow the speeches of Martin Luther King, the speech at the Riverside Church where he attacked the imperialist American government for its genocide role in Vietnam, many people felt that that is what got him killed, myself included. And so I thank you. Did you want to give the name of the book again, please? Or the
Yes, Sister Betty. It's entitled An Act of State, The Execution of Martin Luther King by William F. Pepper.
Thank you. That's what you come here for, people. You come here so that you can find out and arm yourself with information against this misinformation that you're getting about history. Without further ado, we want to go to another comrade who always has a method for educating us. Brother Sayero, your mic is open. Thank you for waiting.
Well, very, very profound program this evening. And Sister Betty, I want to continue with what everyone is saying to you. You're taking that We Carry On spirit, that Ralph had wanted us to carry on. You're taking it to the next level. And much appreciated and much loved you are. Believe that. I want to start out by saying that as I've been listening and I did some analysis, I looked at the fact that what happens when they kill off our leaders, they terrorize their families too, so they don't grow to be as powerful or astounding to continue the work in the manner that the revolutionary would. This is what happens, and then if they see, just as they did Malcolm X's grandson, who they threw off the roof from Mexico, that there will be strength that will come out from that family, they eliminate them too. Just as we have comrades in prison, some didn't go into prison as revolutionary. But I want to read a passage from a comrade who's not only a writer, but profound, outspoken inmate, if he has not been disappeared.
Your equipment a little different. You're getting a lot of static.
That static is coming from the FBI. I know where that's coming from.
Okay.
But don't make
okay.
no mistake about it. Make no mistake about it. We're all
right.
Under the looking glass.
Gotcha.
All right.
Keep going.
Live from Death Row. Huh?
Colin, you're
right, can you all hear me?
Yes, you can.
Okay, please. Live from Death Row. This is from a comrade. Mackendall Singh Q, who has been writing for the Burning Spirit for quite a while, but I think they... In 1991, I arrived at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary. It was a state prison in McAllister I was transported to, the prison on the Green Lizard. As convicts called the Big Green Prison, it had traveled there from the Lexington Assessment and Reception Center at the Lexington Correctional Center, where I had entered the Oklahoma Department of Corrections and been processed as a prisoner. From my seat on the bus, I looked through the barred window and gazed out at the prison. staring at Oklahoma's oldest prison, seeing the penitentiary, and that was the state's big house. The Oklahoma State Penitentiary was an old whitewashed fortress like prison with a five-story and stone walls that were buttressed by guard towers. A dome covered the rotunda. And a chain link fence surrounded the perimeter with coils of razor wire on top of it. It was as gloomy as the slave fort in Elamina. As I looked out at the prison, I felt a sense of dread because it was a notorious Big Mac, a penitentiary that had gained notoriety for the brutality, cruelty, stabbing, killing, mayhem that had occurred behind its forbidding walls. It was also known as the Wall. Big Mac was the worst L hole in the entire Oklahoma prison system. It was where Oklahoma's oldest, coldest, and hardest, coldest and hardest and most dangerous convicts were confined. It was where cons did the hardest time in the state. At the age of 19, I had just arrived with my crime partner, Richard Hayman, who was 22. We had a death sentence that we had received for a robbery. So we were headed for death row. Under the watchful eyes of guards armed with shotguns, we filed off the bus. Our heads were shaved. We had on jumpsuits, and we were manacled in handcuffs and shackles with a chain around our waist that was attached to a black box that covered the cuffs and which was secured with a padlock. After disembarking from the bus, we were marched through the prison's east gate and led into the penitentiary. It was a door of no return for us, as a gate through which we were never to return to the free world. When the gate rolled shut and locked behind us, we were behind the walls and headed for its darkest confines. As we shuffled along, I saw an old cell house looming up under the sky. I also saw modern housing units that dotted its vast grounds. They were A unit, C unit, D unit, and E unit. And they were surrounded by chain link fencing with razor wire. We were led to the cells where we entered the rotunda. It was massive. Circular space inside the building with a high ceiling and checkered floors that shine like glass, and a barred control center that was central command. Huge paintings were festooned on its walls, and catwalks led from the east cell house to the west cell house. The walls were pocked with bullet holes, where guards had opened fire from the catwalks at one time or another. The rotunda was panoptic. It was a panoptic center. It was an entryway to the east cell house, the west cell house, and the F cell house that could be seen all around from the center of it. It also led into the administration building. As I stood in the rotunda, I looked at the old ornate murals that hung in it, seeing images of Virgin Mary, baby Jesus, the first Thanksgiving, Napoleon and George Washington at Valley Forge. They had been painted by Conrad Mapp, C-O-N-R-A-D, a con who had served time at the prison for killing his wife with a shotgun and putting her through meat grinders in an attempt to dispose of her body.
Hello, Brother Sierra, we
have I'm almost done. Let me finish this. I'm almost done. I'm almost done, please.
Thank you.
I felt dwarfed by the sheer size of the rotunda, as I stood there looking at those murals in that forbidding circular room with its cold steel bars reaching up toward them, where the sun's rays broke through the skylight at its peak. Inside the rotunda, we were locked in a holding cell, and our manacles were We were then ordered to strip out of our jumpsuits and given prison blues and bedrolls. Once we were dressed and handcuffed and shackled again, we were led to the S-cell house. We carried our bedrolls from the rotunda as we were escorted there. A sign was above the gate, a gated corridor that led to the S-cell house. In both black letters it read, death row. So I'm going to stop right there, but I want to continue this particular writing because it's 20 pages of profound transition from convict to revolutionary. That's what this brother became. He started following the chairman in 1992, but I'll go further with this comment. But that's what happens, you all. This is what happens with us. We carry on the work, and it is so. We carry on the work that Ralph Warner did. We're to carry on what we all on this call are doing. Carry this work on because we have another generation up and coming that want to see some profound things that would occur and give them hope. That's where we're at. And right now, we need to continue to organize in the name of those who transition, as we all will. And on my urn, I have written, I will see you soon.
Well, thank you. And again, I...
Hands off for the three. Go to handsoffwithwoohoo.com because the chairman will be going to court in February with the three. Uhuru.
Uhuru. And we look forward to part two and part three in the coming weeks. The first description that you provided us with is a description, as far as I'm concerned, of any concentration camp I ever saw in a World War II movie. But in America, they get away with not calling it what it really is. It's a death camp, it's a concentration camp, and it has only one objective, and that is to destroy the humans that are inside. So I thank you, Comrade Fedor. And again, I apologize, but sound bites, please. Sound bites, and please give us the website for this particular article. I assume it's in the Burning Spear, and I assume if you go to the website of the Burning Spear, you can access this article by the date. Is that so?
No, this this particular letter had not gone to the Burning Spear. It was personally written to me.
Okay, so... a suggestion that in the future you try to give us articles that they can, the public can go back and read in its entirety at their own leisure, as well as hearing it on Blog Talk Radio. I would like to make that suggestion to you. This article,
well, you can always go to theburningspirit.com for these types of reads. And I would suggest to everybody we begin to do these types of reads, because right now we are our own liberators and nobody's going to do for us what we need to do for ourselves. We need to step up our game. That's what we've got to do.
Is this particular writer on any of the website pages of the Burning Spear?
Yes, Mackendall Cinque. That's C-I-N-Q-U.
Okay, so if they put that name on that website, some other items that are written by him will come up, correct?
I'm not sure how that works. I'll be sitting here lying to you, but I can ask for Kelia Naive, and then
okay.
I will follow through with that. Yes.
It's about education. You know, when you want to give students homework, you got to be realistic in terms of where they can go to find additional readings. But
are you criticizing me, my sister? Are you criticizing me?
This is excellent. I'm going to open up
and
give everyone who's on a chance before we go to Brother Joel, the last four digits, please listen for the last four digits of your number. If you want to make a comment, please do so. The first three digits are 917. I repeat, the first three digits are 917, and the last four are 9532. Did you want to make a comment? 9532. Your mic is open. Did you want to make a comment? Hello? 9532. Did you want to make a comment? Okay. Thank you for joining us. You're more than welcome to listen. All right. We're going to go to the, excuse me, caller. And again, if you don't wish to comment, that is no, there's no problem. Okay, I hope I haven't made an error here. 2863, did you want to make a comment? 774-2863, Brother Saddam, did you want to make a comment tonight? Your mic is open. Hello? 2863, did you want to make a comment? All right. Thank you for listening. So we will go to the next speaker. Bear with me. The list is very long. Okay, Brother Joel, pardon me. The discussion last week dealt with the empire, but if you also wanted to give an assessment of Martin Luther King and how should we assess his contribution to history instead, you can do so. It's up to you. Your mic is...
Yes, thank you so much for inviting me to speak here and for the discussion that's being provided. Not just the discussion that's being provided, but a discussion from which people are learning to see through to the heart of things and to go into action based on that. Now, I want to say that we've just finished celebrating Martin Luther King Day and all the things that were coming together at the time, and also the cowardly weakness of the U.S. ruling class and its allies around the world in organizing the assassination of that wonderful leader that opened all of our eyes. Now, we've heard again and again about the fact that Martin Luther King had traveled to the point where he was joining the anti-war movement with the civil rights movement and the human rights movement and the anti-racism movement with the war the movement against the imperialist war and the Vietnam War. But what's not mentioned as much, and we can go into the reasons for that, is that Martin Luther King, after having joined the struggle in Tennessee with the sanitation workers and linked the movement to the labor movement and was attempting to reawaken the labor movement into its revolutionary potential. There was also something else that was being discussed at the time and was being organized at the time, and that was the Poor People's March on Washington. Now, we know that Martin Luther King's name is often associated with the giant civil rights march that brought the civil rights movement into the front of the minds of the people all over this country and all over the world. But the Poor People's March, in a certain way, was indicating that it could be a march on Washington for keeps, because it was going to organize poor people across the country, bridging all the gaps of the different forms of oppression. And it was not just going to be the type of march where people go to Washington, D.C., or some other venue. and walk around and carry signs, chant, and then get on the buses to go home. And after which, the traffic is flowing. This was going to be the people marching Washington and camping out there and staying out there until real change comes about in this country. It was something that went to the heart of the empire. And it was something that had the potential of creating a new consciousness among all the working and oppressed people in this country and all others of goodwill in relation to those circumstances. It was going to be a mass Washington, march on Washington, that was going to stay in the nation's capital and demand change until change was brought about. And that's you can see why those particular plans are very little mentioned in the mass media and even in a lot of the media that's more specialized in criticizing the system, because it had the potential of massively accelerating a movement that could overthrow and replace this entire system into a system really based on sharing the wealth of the globe as one big humanity from one side of the earth to the other. And it would have been an amazing culmination of what was developing at the time. And just thinking about it and remembering it and going into what it would have been like had that march taken place in relation to the situation today. In other words, when we look at this oppressive genocidal system, we have to realize that a problem has to be understood from the standpoint of the solution to that problem. And this was raising the whole specter of revolution against the capitalist system and to replace that with a truly human social relations and world solidarity around the world to bury the system that has culminated in the worst and most massive oppression that the world has ever seen, with, like I say again, a system based on human needs instead of the private profit of a handful of imperialists and genocidal maniacs that are today calling many of the shots. So I want to say that when we think of Martin Luther King and all of the things that were happening around that time and place, that we think about the poor people's march, not merely from the point of view of something which hadn't happened but would have had tremendous impact, but from the point of view of rebuilding the organization necessary to create a poor people's march again to complete the impact of what was planned and had the potential at that time, and bring it through to a completed accomplishment of changing the world fundamentally, and looking at what was planned as something that has to be continued. And gives us many hints about what the methods of continuing are, and also what the potential of the masses of people really is under the right appeal and the right leadership. I have to say, when I was involved in the work stoppage in Lewisburg, in solidarity with the Attica prisoners, the Attica brothers, against the massacre that was being prepared there, that you know, this was a prison, and there was a lot of racial polarization and contempt among many of the more backward prisoners. And once the strike got off the ground and electrified the prisoners, all of the divisive crap melted in a few seconds. And that's what we have to see on a national, on a world scale, in this country, as people come together to make the revolution, not just against the capitalist system, but for the creation of a true global humanity. And thank you again for giving me the opportunity to speak in this wonderful forum that's continuing as the situation goes on and is making a powerful contribution and keeping in our minds the memory and the solidarity with those who have paid the great price of standing up and resisting capitalism, imperialism, sexism, homophobia, and all the other backwards and devices of false consciousness that the media are pumping into our minds all the time. Again, thank you for running this forum and giving me an opportunity to speak at it, by which I'm honored and humbled.
Well, thank you, and I want to thank all of you this evening for the amazing contribution that you have made. I'm going to ask your forbearance. I'm going to try and bring some words forward for you, and I ask your patience.
Members of the Black Panther Party in New York, but I wasn't above ground very long in New York. I went underground in 1969, so less than a year. I worked above ground. At the time that we first started the organization here in New York, we concentrated a lot more on social issues like rent strikes, like free clothing drives. I don't think the Black Panther Party in New York started its breakfast program until 69, if I remember correctly. So I didn't really work very much in that program itself. We were involved a lot in gathering clothes that winter, or each winter, actually, we would go to the different merchants who sold in our community. We go to the cleaners that had businesses in the community, and we would ask them to donate the leftover clothes. Like some of the merchants, they would have clothes that, like we call seconds, they would send them back. We asked them not to send them back, give them to us, especially like coats and pants and things that people could use. And the cleaners, we asked them, the people who left clothes 6 months, a year, they not, you don't think they're coming back, donate them to us so we can give them to the community. And so we were able to gather quite a bit of clothing, coats, and things like that for the winter and be able to get, distribute them within the community.
Well, aside from helping the community directly, because the Black Panthers, you know, they're known for radicalism and for kind of military, you know, militarism. So what kind of activities did you guys get into down that length?
Well, truthfully, most of that is an exaggeration.
Yeah.
Most of that was the press giving the police an out for what they were doing. Mm-hmm. We were being attacked by the police. We were being, our offices were being kicked down, doors kicked in. When we weren't there, they would be come in and trash the place, snatch up stuff and take with them, come to our apartments, our houses, kick open the doors, go through our property, take property, trash property. So it comes to a point where we started defending ourselves. That's how the military thing come about. Well, they claimed that we were attacking police. Was in fact, the police was attacking us, and we were defending ourselves. So it really wasn't a very much military activity going on in the Black Panther Party in the early years.
Family, that was a lot of history.
So what I want to say to you today is what Brother Ralph started off by saying to us. If you lose touch with your warrior class, you have no future. I'm going to open up the mics for a few more comments in terms of Brother Sekou, and I want to give a shout-out to this a tape that Brother Kazi shared with me, and perhaps Brother Kazi can give you more information about this particular, I think it's the Black Media Station. Brother Kazi, I'm opening up your mic, and Sister Ann, I'm opening up your mic as well in terms of this tape today. It's called Honoring Sekou. It's on YouTube, Honoring Sekou Odinga. Dr. Ma'at and Haki Shakur, did you want to comment further, either one of you?
No, Betty, you should just play it. I will say something real quick, though, as far as knowing what it means to be a soldier of the people. Sekou was a soldier of the people. And if we all could have been like, be like him, I mean, he played it like a Hollywood movie, but for real. Former Black Panther taking it to another level, the Black Liberation Army, enemy of white supremacy and colonialism. He was a brother, father, grandfather, great-grandfather, commander-in-chief. He taught us by example, unconditional love of the people, guided his steps. The charge, be like him, and carry it on. What does it mean to carry it on? Pick up the gun and aim it at the oppressor, not the people. Play it.
Sister Ann, did you want to say anything further?
I think what Kazi just said was absolutely what I would have said. So.
Okay, well, I'm going to give you the information. It's I'm having difficulty going back to that particular spot because I'm not really a tech. It's just called Honoring Sekou Odinga at my aunt. And I'm going to try and...
To describe the era of colonization and to describe the era...
Yeah, this part of the tape is not as clear. So I'm going to have to break it off at this point. But, again, if you want to reference it, it's called Honoring Sekou Odinga. Black liberation is collective liberation. If you Google it at YouTube, the information should come up. I want to just open up the mic for Sister Julia at this point and for Brother Sayedo. Sister Julia, in terms of, did you want to make some more comments in terms of Brother Comrade Joel's statement about the march that was intended by Martin Luther King? And I want to open up Brother Sayedo's mic because you should be connecting the dots between what the government was doing to those who were fighting back and defending themselves. I think it's obvious that everybody in this country has the right to self-defense but us. And everybody knows that the statistics on the murders of our community, especially our youth, at the hands of the Army of Occupation went down dramatically when the Panthers were on, the Black Panthers were on the scene in our communities. I mean, this is not something I'm making up. You can document it. And I think we also, somebody needs to talk about COINTELPRO. I would hope that Ann or Sister Julia, somebody, please talk about COINTELPRO within the context of this discussion of warriors like Brother Sekou. But before we do that and take it home, I want to ask Brother Sayedo, I think you commented that Chairman Yeshitela, or Mali Yeshitela, will be coming up for his hearing or his trial in February. This is important because the African People's Socialist Party is being focused on as what the new term for COINTELPRO is black identity extremists. So, Brother Sierra, could you give us that information again?
Uhuru.
Yes, please.
Is everyone on the call, if everyone on the call already understands, in September, the attorneys for the Uhuru 3 asked for dismissal. They gave a brilliant analysis as to were bogus. You know it, and I know it, that they do frame us. We are always framed. It's accepted by this larger society of colonizers as being true. We're seeing this with the case of the dummy that's spewing a lot of lies out of his mouth, and another dummy, a dummy named Trump and another dummy named Biden, both spewing lies out of, accepted as true by the colonizers. Well, the fact is that we always, our struggle is never heartfelt as if, as when they take the Ukrainians in and they give them huge sums of money, country that they choose to do so while they starve and kidnap our children, starve our kids and kidnap our children. So I'm going to say this in short, that we're going to have to become more of a collective. We need to stop saying that I'm of this group or I'm of that group and become an organized collective. The only way our strength is going to happen is we fit as a glove and not on the same trail that we've been going towards for some freedom that we're looking for, but we never get to. It's a fight. So, again, I'm going to say go to Uhuru, handsoffuhuru.org. Sign on. There is a document to sign on for volunteerism and in your talents and in your honorable integrity. Please sign on. This is how we begin to really work together. And I'll say thank you very, very, very much for even listening to someone like me on this call.
Okay. Thank you. Once again, go to the website that Brother Seattle is explaining, because the, as we say, the struggle continues, but the ruling class continues. We are losing our warriors, but the ruling class is not losing its warriors. They're in crisis now. They're increasing their warriors because they are in crisis. And it's important for us to understand that. Does anybody else want to comment on that? It's very important that people understand where we are in history right now. We're in a pivotal moment. And even Martin Luther King said, there is something seriously wrong with capitalism. He said that.
Yep. Yep.
Anybody else want to comment?
He did say that, that's for sure.
Betty, can I make an announcement?
Yes.
There's a memorial on January 18th in Atlanta, but elsewhere in the country. It will be the day of the forest offender because we're remembering the assassination of Tortuguita. In Philly, it will be at Clark Park at 5 p.m. The other two things. Israel is using Martin Luther King as a moral shield. The Israeli embassy in Washington announced, I believe it was yesterday or today, that it honors Martin Luther King, reminding us that they named a street after him in Jerusalem. And the third thing I would like to ask you all, if you would send your favorite Palestine-related poem to Sister Comrade Betty, so that we can create a poetic intifada. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I want to thank you. Does anybody else want to make any further comments? Okay, well, I'm going to try and make this work.
That time has come for us in relation to Vietnam. The truth of these words is beyond doubt, but the mission to which they call us is the most difficult one. Even when pressed by the demands of inner truth, men do not easily assume the task of opposing their government's policy, especially in time of war. Nor does the human spirit move without great difficulty against all the apathy of conformist thought within one's own bosom and in the surrounding world. Moreover, when the issues at hand seem as perplexing as they often do, in the case of this dreadful conflict, we are always on the verge of being mesmerized by uncertainty. But we must move on. Some of us
90 seconds.
To break the silence of the night have found that the calling to speak is often a vocation of agony. But we must speak. We must speak with all the humility that is appropriate to our limited vision. But we must speak. We must rejoice as well. For sure, this is the first time in our nation's history
60.
That a significant number of its religious leaders have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high ground of a firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. Perhaps a new spirit is rising among us. If it is, let us trace its movements and pray that our own inner being may be sensitive to its guidance. For we are deeply in need of a new way beyond the darkness that seems so close.
the
burnings of my own heart, as I have called for radical departures from the destruction of Vietnam. Many persons have questioned me about the wisdom of my past.
And I want to remind all of you that are here that this is what our task is now. We must have the courage to at least pick up the gauntlet that Martin Luther King threw down. And so I thank you, and on the words of Martin Luther King, I wish you all good night. Atula, continue.
I'm nevertheless greatly sad for such questions mean that the inquirers have not really known me.
Thank you all and good night.